In the past few years, police violence, police brutality, police racism, and police murder have risen massively to the fore as political issues all around the world. Now, this was, of course, spearheaded by the incredible Black Lives Matter movement in America, and especially the huge uprising we saw in the wake of the murder of George Floyd last year, where over 25 million people took to the streets all across the country in the biggest social movement in American history, and building on the incredible protest that took place earlier in response to the police murders of Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Breonna Taylor, and a whole series of other innocent African American people. I think importantly, this movement has not just been marked by enormous numbers taking part and inspiring mass movement, but also by extraordinary bravery, kind of breathtaking defiance, people being willing to directly confront the cops, and not only that, but to take down and to destroy the kind of main institutions and symbols of oppression and racism in American society. Most prominently and fantastically, of course, there was the burning down of the police station in Minneapolis in June of last year, a thoroughly supportable action taken by masses of people in that city. It's worth saying, though, that while America has been the heartland of this incredible anti-cop activism, it has by no means been confined to the United States. That all across the world, in country after country, from Chile to Hong Kong to France to Palestine, Sudan, a whole series of others, masses of people in just the last few years have risen up and taken direct action and called out the extreme brutality and atrocities that are committed by the police on a daily basis. And of course, we have to mention also that in Australia, there is a long history of police brutality, which has increasingly been taken on in the past few years. So the fact that over 400 Indigenous people have been murdered at the hands of the police without a single conviction in just the last 30 years, the really vile police racism that's directed towards the African community, certainly in Melbourne where I am, but all around the country as well, and the police harassment of the Muslim and Arab community that's been going on for the last 20 years, as well as general police abuse and violence towards poor and working class communities, means that taking a stand against the cops in Australia remains a very important political issue for those of us on the left. Now, these incredible movements have had a really huge impact on the state of world politics, I think, and that impact is not going to be forgotten anytime soon. On the most basic of levels, for masses of people all around the world, these movements have really strongly brought into question the common assumptions that we are taught about the cops from an early age. So, from the time that we're born, we're all indoctrinated to have an extremely positive view of the police. We're taught to see them as brave, selfless, heroic, maybe even a little bit cool and inspiring. Films, TV shows, political leaders, and a huge variety of public spectacles reinforce these ideas over and over from the time we're born to when we go through school to most of our adult lives. However, the reason that such enormous campaigning, pro-cop campaigning exists is precisely because the reality of the police under capitalism could not be more different than what is presented to us. Rather than protecting people from criminality, the police, in fact, are some of the key perpetrators of it all around the world. So globally, the police murder around 1,000 people every week. If someone is murdered by a stranger in the United States, there is a 1 in 3 chance that that stranger was a cop. The police are also far more likely to commit sexual assault or domestic violence than any other section of the population. And in fact, they're astronomically more likely to commit those crimes than to prevent them. Also, when it comes to things like theft and burglary, again, things that we're told police are there to protect us from, in fact, the police are by and large the key culprits of this in society too. So for example, in the United States, what's called civil asset forfeiture, which is when the police simply take the belongings of a person, which in America they can do for pretty much any reason, It accounts for more theft every year in the United States than every other form of theft in that country combined. And here in Melbourne, where I am, the police make a cool 20 million bucks every year just by taking the belongings of others. More than all of this even is the fact, though, that the police have always been the vanguard force for crushing movements for social progress and workers' rights throughout their entire history. So, as is pretty well known, leaders of the civil rights movement in the United States were routinely assassinated by the police. Perhaps most famously, the Black Panthers leader, Fred Hampton, who was only 21 when he was drugged with barbiturates by the Chicago Police Department to the point that he became unconscious and was then machine gunned to death while sleeping in his apartment. Leaders of the gay rights and LGBTI liberation movements have frequently been targeted by the police, probably most famously during the Stonewall riots of the 1960s, where hundreds of LGBTI protesters were beaten for hours on end. And though it's somewhat less well known, the women's liberation movement has also faced frequent police violence throughout its history. So on Black Friday, November 18 of 1910, around 300 women who wanted to demand the right to vote marched to the British Parliament. As a consequence of this, those women were trapped for 6 hours and beaten senseless, and a number of them sexually assaulted by the British police. And photographed here is Rosa May Billinghurst, who was a disabled suffragette, a leader of the movement. And she was dragged down a side alley where her wheelchair was smashed and she was assaulted. And on top of all of this, the workers' movement has a history of being brutalized and massacred by the police that is really far too vast to really just briefly mention here. They'll talk about it a little bit less later. Okay, so these movements of the past few years, one positive thing is that they have increasingly made people more aware of this reality when it comes to the police. I think on top of this, another positive development that we've seen take place is that these movements have led to many new political demands and slogans being raised, demands which seek to challenge and undermine the power that the police have in our society. So calls to defund or disarm or even abolish the police have become extremely widespread in a number of these movements. And as can be seen here, they've even had to be taken up to a certain extent by the mainstream media. However, as widespread and as impassioned as these different calls have been, the response of those in power paints a very different picture. So, after channeling the Black Lives Matter movement in order to get himself elected, Joe Biden in June of this year announced that he would be redirecting $350 billion away from a COVID relief bill to instead go towards the hiring, training, and arming of more police in the United States. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of England, has similarly pledged that he will drastically increase police powers and resources over the coming period. And he has declared that there will be over 10,000 police a day hired just to defend the COP26 summit of the world's worst climate criminals, which is happening in the UK later this year. In Australia, the federal government has recently pledged that they will increase police funding by more than $500 million over the coming years. Now, this refusal to countenance weakening the powers of the police, even as their crimes become more and more apparent to masses of people, this refusal to countenance weakening those powers on the part of those who rule our society is important for understanding what the police actually are and the role that they play under capitalism. So, the cops are often presented as if they're a kind of timeless institution, defending us going back to, you know, rogue cavemen and first dinosaurs and the other threats that sort of early humanity had to deal with. Suffice it to say, this is extremely wrong. No such thing as the police existed until the late 1700s, a very recent historical innovation. Before this, human societies had existed for tens of thousands of years, for whom the idea that a section of the population should be permanently armed and entitled to exert extreme force over everyone else with impunity would have seemed to be extremely strange and pretty ridiculous. But it was three very closely linked processes during the 1700s that led to the creation of the police. And these three processes were slavery, colonialism, and the creation of an industrial working class. And importantly, I think the key thing to understand is that these three processes had two important things in common with each other. So the first is that all of these were central to enforcing the system of capitalism onto those who at the time lived in a very wide variety of non-capitalist societies. So whether you're talking about peasants in Europe or indigenous communities in the Americas and Asia, or the very wide diversity of societies that existed all throughout Africa, it was through these processes that the mass of people were forced completely against their will to give up their land and freedoms in order to become exploitable labor for capitalists. And in each of these cases, extreme violence was the main thing that was used to make this happen. The second factor, which flows from all of this, was the fact that the consequences of these violent processes, slavery, colonialism, forcing people to be industrial workers, all of this precipitated a level of social unrest, resistance, rebellion, and disobedience, which was basically unprecedented in world history until that point in time. So though there had been, you know, at times pretty significant peasant uprisings throughout the Middle Ages and other forms of social resistance, the scale of resistance that was unleashed globally in the late 1700s, from the Haitian Revolution to the slave uprisings in America to the huge riots, strikes, and revolutions of workers all across Europe, had absolutely no precedent in world history. And it's for this reason that that period of history is still called the Age of Revolutions to this day. In the face of this, those who ruled society at the times had to come to grips with the fact that it no longer had adequate means to keep those that they ruled over in check, and that they would have to build new means of doing that if they were going to preserve their own rule. So the creation of the police was their response to this resistance, and it was absolutely essential to establishing capitalism. It's really not an exaggeration to say that if the ruling class had not created the cops, the system of capitalism would have had very, very little chance of conquering the globe in the way that it did. And indeed, the way that the police were created really reflects the interconnection between these three processes: slavery, colonialism, and creating an industrial working class. And I'll just give two brief examples that can help to illuminate that a little bit. So the first one is Britain, the first capitalist society. So in the late 1700s, there was a huge campaign of non-violent civil disobedience in Ireland that was obviously directed against Britain's colonial rule. This disobedience led to the creation of the world's first police force, the Royal Irish Constabulary, pictured in the middle there. Now, their founder was the Chief Secretary of Ireland, a guy called Robert Peel. And Peel also happened to be an extremely wealthy textile manufacturer in Britain. And he went on to use his experience in building up this militia designed to control the Irish to then build a centralized police force that could protect businesses in London. And this police force was called the Metropolitan Police. And to this day, they are still known as the Bobbies in Robert Peel's honor. Now, these police centered not just in the city, but on the River Thames, where they would kind of oversee exports from the colonies and ensure that starving workers could not have access to any cargo. And they proved themselves to be an extremely effective weapon in controlling and disciplining the lives of the poor. And it's worth saying, in fact, that the ruling class of England was so pleased with what Peel had done that he very soon after became Prime Minister. And as Prime Minister, Peel would go on to oversee the Irish famine of the 1840s, which killed off a quarter of the country's population, and during which the Bobbies, which he had created, would be deployed to ensure that desperately needed crops continued to be exported out of Ireland, in order to make profits for English merchants and agriculturalists, even while the mass of the Irish poor starved to death. And you can see a memorial to them there. So immediately you can see a very strong interconnection between kind of the process of colonialism and the process of disciplining and controlling industrial workers and making profits for bosses. The United States, just briefly, I think illustrates these connections even more clearly. So as I think quite a few people know now, in the deep South in the US, the cops came directly from the slave patrols. There was just, they were one and the same institution. In the West, the cops came from the brigades and militias, which were tasked with colonizing and carrying out genocide in areas like California and Texas. So the Texas Rangers are usually kind of the most famous example of these. And in fact, click to the next one. The Texas Rangers are also just the cops in Texas today. It's the exact same institution. And they were the key forces that carried out genocide in the American West. Their responsibility was to organize savage raids on indigenous communities, on whose lands they would then set up the first police stations, which would act as fortresses if those communities tried to come back and reclaim their land. In the industrial centers of the North in the US, meanwhile, the cops were just directly made by the bosses and only later kind of taken control of by the state. So in Pennsylvania, for example, which was the major center of US industry, the bosses could literally pay just $1 tax to the state, and in return, they would be able to deputize whoever they want. That person would then have full police powers. And indeed, the phrase being on the take as a kind of euphemism for corruption comes from this time, as the bosses would walk into a police station and literally just take cops back to their workplace with them, the factory or whatever, and sick them on any disobedient workers. And in this way, they carried out not just repression, but frequent massacres, mass killings, all that sort of thing. Now, it's worth saying that the ruling class at the time were pretty frank about the fact that this was how the police worked. So the American State Commission on Industrial Relations noted in 1915, they said these words right here, which is, "The police is an extremely efficient force for crushing strikes, but not successful in preventing violence in connection with strikes, nor in maintaining legal and civil rights of the parties to the dispute, nor in protecting of the public. On the contrary, violence seems to increase rather than diminish when the constabulary is brought into an industrial dispute, and the legal and civil rights of the workers have on numerous occasions been violated." So hopefully this gives a bit of a sense that the police, from their creation, were never intended to be a force that, you know, would ensure peace and justice, would maintain, protect the weak, and all that sort of thing. They were very transparently an instrument of the powerful, and though they take on a sort of more universal appearance today, their function remains essentially the same: brutalizing the oppressed and protecting parasites, you know, living or even dead, as you can see here. Okay, so to move towards winding up, one thing I think is that though there are plenty of people who can kind of acknowledge that there are a lot of problems with the police and can even see that they are, you know, servants of an unjust system and all that sort of thing, but will nonetheless raise a number of points against the idea of abolishing the cops in their entirety. So I just wanted to briefly run through a few of those. The first objection is the idea that for all their flaws, you know, we need the police. The world is a scary place and we need them to protect us from burglars and murderers and predators and all this sort of thing. Now, I already went through the fact that the police actually murder, steal and assault far more than the rest of the population and play a very role in protecting people from those sorts of things. But I think it's worth saying as well that the reality is, it's not just Marxists who say this. Virtually every form of research on the police, from mainstream, bourgeois, small L liberal kind of scholars and commentators, makes the same point over and over again, that the police do not actually play a role in preventing crime. So this quote from David Bailey here, I'll read through it briefly because I think it gives a good picture of that. He states, and he's a quite well-known researcher on the police, "The police do not prevent crime. This is one of the best kept secrets of modern life. Experts know it, the police know it, but the public does not know it. Yet the police pretend that they are society's best defense against crime and continually argue that if they are given more resources, especially personnel, they will be able to protect communities against crime. This is a myth. And of course, I think, you know, I could go through the statistics in terms of the fact that the vast majority of burglaries are never investigated, let alone solved. The vast majority of sexual assaults, it's the same thing. Even murders, if there's not a clear suspect after 2 days, homicides are just not investigated at all, and so on and so forth. But in many ways, the more important point is the fact that what's classified as crime in our society in the first place, by and large, are just things that are done by poor people. The really massive issues, whether you're talking about climate change, poverty, starvation, war, the trillions of dollars in offshore tax havens, the million people killed in Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20 years, these things are not treated as crimes. And the people who commit them are, in fact, protected, not prosecuted by the police. Okay, the second argument that people can sometimes raise is that the left should have some sort of sympathy for the cops, because what the police do is extremely stressful, dangerous, taxing, requires a lot of toughness and courage, so we should be able to sympathize with that. I think it's important to say this is also absolute bullshit. The idea that being a cop is one of the most dangerous jobs you can have is simply a myth. So in Australia from 1860 to 1980, only 40 cops were killed on the job. By way of comparison, the number of construction workers or mining workers killed over that same period is estimated to be more than 10,000. And today, jobs such as being a groundskeeper, being a delivery driver, working for Uber Eats, these sorts of things, have significantly higher mortality rates than what the police ever have to go through. So the idea that being a cop is some terrible thing that people should sympathize with is absolute bullshit. Okay. Two last things that I just wanted to quickly address. One is an argument that for all their problems, the cops are workers. They're not billionaires. They're not politicians. They don't hold power. They just do a job for a wage. And so as workers, the left should have some sympathy too. This is pretty ludicrous. The left does not take a position in support of people just because they might get some money to do a certain thing. If a politician takes a bribe in exchange for passing some legislation that will let mining corporations tear up the earth, the left does not say, well, that politician got some money for doing a job, so therefore we support them. The cops' main job is, in fact, to brutalize workers, to brutalize the oppressed, and should not be supported on principle because of that. And this is also reflected in the fact that around the world, the police are universally the most reactionary social layer. Overwhelmingly supporting fascist and neo-Nazi parties in Europe, overwhelmingly supporting the likes of Trump in the United States, and so on and so forth. The final argument that I just wanted to briefly address, and it's one that comes up increasingly frequently in recent history, is the idea that the main problem with the police is a sort of a lack of diversity. And that, you know, in countries like America, the problem is white supremacy and things like this. Now, while the police are obviously extremely racist, it has to be said, the police in pretty much every country are one of the most diverse sections of the population. So in America, the police are actually notably more diverse than the population as a whole. And especially in the big cities, they're astronomically more diverse. Most of the large police stations, it's 40 to 50% non-white at least. This has made absolutely no difference in terms of lessening police violence and brutality. And plenty of research actually shows that non-white cops are more likely to kill or assault non-white people than the white cops are. I think it also ignores the reality that, you know, you take a country like Brazil, where the cops kill 6 times as many people as they kill in America even. Well, they're all non-white there, but it doesn't make them any more humane. Or you take a country like India, where the cops frequently organize massacres of Muslims and the burning down of mosques. The fact that these cops are non-white does not make them any less oppressive or brutal. And as so many of these arguments tend to do, the focus on identity shifts the focus away from where it should be, which is the structural role the police play in protecting the rich and brutalizing the rest of us. All right, well, the final thing I just wanted to say is, and the key argument, I think, that for why we should be for the abolition of the police is quite simply that another world is possible, that all throughout the history of capitalism, despite the brutality and oppression and racism which people have to face day after day, again and again and again, ordinary people show themselves to be capable of transforming the world for the better and of creating a world without a tiny minority that brutalizes people, and instead one in which everyone's safety and justice is ensured by the majority. And there'll be a session on tomorrow evening on what a revolution would look like, which I really encourage people to go to if you want to get a sense of that. But if we want to fight for that world and if we want to achieve that world, that means that we have to be for the abolition of the police. And I'll wrap it up there.